IVM.
Welcome to Dreaming with Your Eyes Open. Ronnie Screwvala is an entrepreneur who I have admired for a long time. His ability to make inroads in an industry that is so tightly controlled by a few was what first had me so impressed. When he released his book a few years ago, I lapped it up and was even more impressed. The more I discovered his journey and the various businesses he had been a part of, the deeper my admiration went. When this project came up, I jumped on it wholeheartedly. Where else was I going to get the opportunity to spend so much time discussing the ins and outs of his career and what he has accomplished? Hi, everybody. Welcome to what is unfortunately going to be the last episode of the Ronnie Screwvala podcast, unless Ronnie decides to do more episodes at some point in the future. But for now, this is going to be it.
Yeah, I think this is going to be it, but we'll have fun doing it.
Yeah, we'll have fun doing it. And hopefully, I'll keep sending you emails every couple of weeks. Hey, Ronnie, you want to talk about anything? You want to talk about anything? And then maybe we can do some more. But what we're going to do right now is we're going to, in some ways, replicate what you had at the end of your book, which was a FAQ section.
Yes.
And what we did is we asked a bunch of listeners for questions that they would be. And we asked a number of listeners for them to submit questions.
Nice.
And we selected a number of questions from the listeners. And then following that, we also asked a lot of the hosts on the podcast network if they had questions which they would like to ask you. And so then we'll go through those as well.
Sounds good.
Right? Okay. So the first question that we have is from Atharva Rajput. His question is, in the movie business, while selecting scripts to produce, how do you assess the artistic merit versus how financially beneficial a film will be?
Well, there's no versus, firstly. I think, artistic merits is a bit of a cliche. So I would say at the core is the storytelling. If it appeals and if it's a story that needs to be told or must be told, and you feel strongly about that, the next step is the director's vision. Mm-hmm. If those two are right, the financial feasibility comes up in a different context because that is a combination of, you know, what's the cost, like anything else you would do with a product. So it's nothing very unique about the creative field that you wouldn't do when you're doing a product or a service. You know, you'd figure out what your USP is, what stands out, and then you'd cost it. You'd back it with the vision. In this case, it is, you know, what's the cost, what's the director's vision, and what's the cast. Mm-hmm. And then who is your target audience for the entire one? Right. And I think that all has to add up. Because the idea is not, I'm going to make something epic and I hope everyone will come and love and see it because that's an indulgence.
Right. Hey, that's interesting. So basically you're saying how Bollywood used to be in the 60s is an indulgence.
Yeah. Sometimes it's there in 2019 and 20
okay.
also.
Okay. All right. The next question we have is from Suresh Patel. Suresh is asking, entrepreneurship and startups are still seen as going off the beaten path in India. You have mentioned the need for many more entrepreneurs. How do you think we can achieve this from school and college so that it's ingrained from a young age?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question because I think it is something that we need to have in our DNA. Mm-hmm. First generation entrepreneurship in this country is not. Family businesses have been.
Right.
And then, you know, starting up these very small businesses have been, you know, is the one. But if you really, core of entrepreneurship is you're going to create 100 jobs, 1,000 jobs, 2,000 jobs, start looking at scale. So school and college is a great way to start because it's like, you know, career counseling that you're in school and what do you want to figure out when you want to grow up. So I think the grounding of a DNA that goes into entrepreneurship is going to be very, very important.
You think
the minute it gets into a syllabus also, you get a lot of parental support because then they feel, you know, you're socializing the rest of your family also on it because that's the other resistance that most people find.
Do you think coursework is more effective or project-based stuff or a combination of it all? Or?
I think at that stage, just talking about it and you know, becoming more aware of it and just letting it enter that your left side of the brain is in itself good enough.
Okay.
Rather than, there doesn't need to be a reason for you need to put it under regiment at that time.
Okay. All right, great. The next question we have is from Rohit Bathan. Do you think we still have a Western fixation when it comes to business and entrepreneurship?
I'd like to say yes so far, unfortunately, in many aspects, primarily because you always have that context to that. But having said that, I must say that more and more people I meet today in entrepreneurs, they're very, very proud of their local innovations for local markets. And they realize that if you know, there's the lookalike ones that will always be there. But a lot of people today are finding local solutions for local problems that exist in countries which may be unique for India. So I think the only problem is they're the unsung heroes.
Okay.
They're not getting the media attention. They're not getting the funding.
Okay.
They don't get the marketing support. They don't get the right mentorship. So therefore, it's not a multiplying effect. It's not inspirational, therefore, to do something, which may be off the beaten path. And that's where really the challenge is.
Do you have an example that you've seen that you think is particularly interesting?
Yeah, I mean, I think we work in the social sector, and I think, you know, finding people who are finding solutions and innovations in water,
right,
or waste management are not glamorous things.
Right.
But there is an entire segment that's looking after them. And I think they're building good, strong businesses.
Okay. All right. That's cool. All right. This next question is from Anjali Bhatti. Hi, Ronnie, sir. I heard you on Cyrus's podcast where you mentioned whoever's in power doesn't affect the affluent or business people. I had a counter question to this. Don't you think governments instead use entrepreneurs and businessmen to their advantage without actually making things easier for them?
Well, I think it's up to you. If you're going to be let anyone, forget about politicians or government, take advantage of you, anyone take advantage of you, your customer can take advantage of you, your employees can take one, your investors can take advantage of you. So I think you need to look at inwards, firstly, as to what. I don't think there's anyone who can really take advantage of you,
right,
and use you in that context. My straight answer is, no, you don't need to if you don't have to. So why are you letting yourself doing it?
Right. Fair. I agree with that. Cool. This is the last listener question we have. This is from Aniket Bareja. How does one keep oneself motivated as an entrepreneur and keep looking at newer initiatives and not get bogged down by one thing?
It's tough, but that's why you're an entrepreneur in the first place. Mm-hmm. So I think you need to understand that the more you get involved on your treadmill stuff, the best kind of most productive time is going to be when you pause.
Okay.
And it's difficult in the beginning because you don't have that right team. Mm-hmm. Then you feel you have the right team, then you're growing at a particular scale. But I think it's a very strong feeling that you need to feel the need and the priority for it.
Right.
That I'm kind of rotting, or this is not going where I want it to go. Mm. The big problem, of course, is that normally when you're starting to go downhill is the first time you get a feel the need for it.
Right.
So, you know, since you've asked the question, all I would say is, as difficult as it may be, if you can prioritize that, and I give my examples a lot to team members and saying, look, if you just had dengue or typhoid for 3 days, what are you going to do? You're just not going to be able to get out of bed, right? At that stage, you think everything's going to collapse around you, but it won't. And 3 days later, you'll come back and pick it up.
Right.
So if you want to find that spare time, when you get back with more clarity, you have no idea how much of more spare time you're going to have.
That actually sounds really interesting because you're right. Nobody is as important as they think they are in some ways.
Yeah, I think that's what... But that realization when you're on the treadmill is tough.
Cool. All right, that's a great place to stop this right now. We'll be back after this quick break where we're going to ask you a number of questions that have come from various hosts on the IBM Podcast Network.
Yeah, sounds good.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. We're here with the second half of the FAQ from the Ronnie Screwvala podcast. And what we're going to do now is we're going to be asking Ronnie a number of questions that have come in from hosts on the IBM Podcast Network. The first question we have is from Amit Verma, host of The Seen and the Unseen.
Hi, I'm Amit Verma, host of the podcast The Seen and the Unseen. My question for you, Ronnie, is this. How much of your success do you attribute to luck?
I think for me, and I've said that in my book also, I don't want to disparage disparage things about being lucky. I think it's a massive effort for you to be able to pick up on luck. I think the effort is one of a lot of preparation. And my core is normally when you're in the right place, the right time, you're lucky. But for that, you need to do a lot of work because you need to be in multiple places to figure out that in one of those places, I'm going to be in the right place, the right time. So I think it's a lot of hard work. And I think if there are some tailwinds that have helped me get through my failures, I think it's because I've constantly been open to, you know, it's like people say there's a wasted meeting. And I'm saying, no, I'm happy to take that meeting because I don't know what opportunity will come, not today, but tomorrow. So if I take that as symptomatic of things, it's about how open are you to be in multiple places so that you, at some stage you can be the right place, the right time.
Wow. Okay. That's extremely insightful answer to what seems like a very straightforward question. Okay, the next question we have is from Mikhail Almeida. Mikhail is one of the hosts of Water Player.
Hi, I'm Mikhail Almeida, host of the Water Player podcast on the IBM network. My question for Ronnie is, how different is it motivating teams in sport and outside of sport? By which I mean motivating groups of people in entrepreneurship and a team? Are they very similar? Are they very different? I'd just like to know what you think about that.
By and large, it's quite different. I mean, I think, you know, I work with a phenomenal team of 350 people in Aswadesh Foundation, the social sector, which is not for profit, where I think the entire level of motivation is quite different because, you know, in a sense, there's got to be a lot more empathy in what you want to do. I may have a target that somebody needs to meet that says, you know, we should have touched 500 farmers, we should have created this kind of level of income. But if the social worker that I'm working with and my team member starts giving me a life and death story that happened there, I have to give it a patient listening. I have to figure out what the actual situations are. When I look at in a corporate world, obviously, you look at things and goal setting in a very different manner in terms of performance. I think when you're looking at sport, it's much more wearing that cap and a coach feeling. Because actually what you're doing at that point in time is you need to really encourage. So not everywhere you need to be positive, but when you're in a sports thing, when you're training people, you need to be hard. And when you need to actually, when you're there playing the game, you need to really be encouraging because that's not the time at which to logicalize with everyone. So that's why I think they're all very different.
Right. The next question we have is from Karthik Nagarajan, the host of the Filter Coffee podcast on which you appeared.
Ronnie, this is Karthik Nagarajan, host of the Filter Coffee podcast in which you were a guest recently. You know, you mentioned at that point to me that a lot of people speak to you only about your successes. So I want to ask you this. What is your most favorite failure?
I have tons of them. And I think, you know, I think we talked about that a little bit.
We've
on the show
about it quite
also,
a bit, yes.
where I feel where people ask you, what's your worst failure?
Uh-huh.
I mean, favorite is a nice, polite way of saying that. And I'm saying it's yet to come.
Okay.
And I think, as I mentioned before, if you can laugh at your failure 6 months later, then you know it's only a setback.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think at different stages in my life, from the time I failed in my exam and into college in commerce, to many, many things before that, to where I lost 30,000 rupees on a business venture that I didn't have in the first place. I mean, the list goes on.
Okay. All right. The next question we have is from Satyajit, the host of the Paperback podcast.
Hi, Ronnie. I'm Satyajit Roy, co-host of Paperback podcast on the IVM podcast app. I have a couple of questions for you. I listened to the whole audiobook and it was amazing. So one of the questions I had is, are basement offices critical to success? Because you've mentioned in your book that you worked out of a basement office even when you met Rupert Murdoch. So that's one question. And the second question I have is, do you feel that not having a safety net drives you much harder to make ends meet? Is it better to not have a safety net in terms of finances? So does that kind of accelerate the chances for success, I guess?
Yeah. So I think, obviously a basement office is not the criteria for success, but it's a nice place to start because you're really underground. And I have memories of that for different reasons. You know, one is you want to come up for breath of fresh air constantly. And I think that's what life is about. That's what entrepreneurship is about. How often can you come out for a breath of fresh air and how different does it feel? So it taught me that lesson. And it also taught me a lesson that when the power is out, you need some torches around the place, right? I mean, it doesn't give you any warnings. And therefore, you're in the middle of something and boom, there's blackout. Whereas everywhere else, you can always carry on with work. So I think those teaches you different life lessons as far as that goes. So that's my answer on that one.
I think your second question was... The second question had to do with, do you think not having a safety net leads you to more?
I think absolutely. I think the adrenaline that goes into not having a safety net is exactly what, you know, when we used to go to the circuses and the trapeze artists would not have a safety net. There's a sense of tension in your body. There's a positive tension. Mm-hmm. There's a sense of constant vigil that I think it actually spurs you on in a very, very... And look, it can drain you. It can suck you out. But if you can use it positively, it's like a turbocharge.
I agree. I think the idea that, you know, that they talk about that knot in the center of your stomach, right? I mean, I think that kind of drives people in like crazy ways. The next question we have is from Racheta Sharma. She co-hosts the Paperback podcast with Satyajit.
Hi, Ronnie. I'm Racheta, the co-host of Paperback by the Open Library Project and a huge, huge fan. My question to you is that the biggest fear for me as an entrepreneur has been stagnating in my learning curve. I think that's something I really, really fear. And I just want to know, what is your biggest fear as an entrepreneur? What is the thing that you know, you want to make sure you never, never have to experience as an entrepreneur, or, you know, what you'd work towards bettering every day as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, no, I think it's a very important question and a good one. And I think my worst fear is having an expiry date. You know, like when you have a product and you have an expiry date, I think my worst fear is I don't want to have an expiry date. I don't want to stamp myself with an expiry date. A little bit of what you said, where to quite an extent, where you said, you know, I don't want to stagnate. But to me, the expiry date is a combination of many, many things.
Right.
But it just forces you to be very disruptive, innovative, curious, just keep going. So I think, yeah, my worst fear is not having an expiry date.
Cool. All right. The next question we have is from Ambi Parmeshwaran. Ambi hosts the Sponge podcast with us.
Hi, this is Ambi Parmeshwaran, host of the Sponge podcast on IBM Podcast Network. My question to Ronnie Screwvala is this, that Ronnie, you had some really outstanding successes and you also had some failures in your illustrious journey as an entrepreneur. Can you tell me which was the success which you had, which you did not expect? The surprising success of your life. Thank you.
Difficult really to just pinpoint that at various stages. I think some of my initial success were I came from a lower middle class income family. So the very fact that I was kind of written off by my parents as somebody who didn't want to study, I had flunked my intercommerce exams. And from there, I wanted to start off something and be my own entrepreneur. In itself was shocking for everyone around. And for most people, it sounded like this guy's really given up, because obviously he can't find himself a job. Nobody's going to hire him. So now the only thing he can do is turn to starting to be an entrepreneur. And I think my ability to gain the confidence of my parents over the next 1 year on that, I think gave me the sense of success that kind of resonates to the rest of my life.
That's a great answer. The next question we have is from Varun Dugirala. He is the host of Advertising is Dead, which you have also appeared on.
Hi, I'm Varun Dugirala, co-founder and content chief of The Glitch and also the host of Advertising is Dead. My question for Ronnie is, how do you build the balance of culture, product quality and business focus in a venture?
Top of the line, I think, is really culture, because that's just permeates down to everybody. Mm-hmm. Because you can't really build a business that is successful unless you take a lot of people with you.
Right.
So I think between that, I'd put culture right at the top.
Okay.
It's an ongoing process. You need to constantly be communicative. You got to be constantly admitting to your faults and the mistakes. You need to call a spade a spade.
Right.
You need to be blunt. You need to give that feedback. That's what's the, and what was the third part you said?
Culture, product quality, and business focus in a venture. How do you balance these three?
Yeah, so I think business focus in that sense is pretty much getting the culture right.
Okay.
I think the product one is again of innovation. People always think that product is about getting that idea and you got one product out and that's what it is. Mm-hmm. But today, I think we all know that it's an ongoing process of improvement, because the product is almost like a service today. Mm-hmm. There isn't any hard product. It has to sort of innovate itself on an ongoing basis. So I can't say I find such a strong correlation right now between the three words that
right.
you've asked me, but I think, you know, I'd put culture right at top, because then you can drive things around.
All right, cool. So the next question we have is from Anupam Gupta. He's the host of the Paisa Vaisa show.
Hi, Ronnie. I'm Anupam, host of the Paisa Vaisa podcast. My question to you is, how do you let go of something that you've built over such a long period of time, your company that you've built with so much of effort? And I'm sure that, you know, you would know about this since you've sold a very big company as part of your career. Help me with that. How does one let go? How does one sell such a big venture that you've built over a long period of time? Thanks, Ronnie.
I think for me, and there was almost like a realization, so I can answer that question now. Maybe at that stage, I would have used more logic with it, is that there's a small sliver of a difference between being emotional about a business and being passionate about it. And I think what I was extremely passionate about what I was building, but I could keep the emotion part of it out. The minute you do that, you can turn out to be much more objective, and then you go with the objective reason. So for me, if I was divesting that company between the fact that I'd built something for 15 years, but it was going to be owned by a bigger brand by far, and they would take care of it, for the 1,400 employees that we had and their sense of pride from a brand one to a brand two. And I think it just made all around sense across. But the core to answer your question is the difference between being passionate and being emotional.
Great. The next question we have is from Dinkar. Dinkar is the host of the Geek Fruit podcast.
Hello, Mr. Screwvala. This is Dinkar from the Geek Fruit podcast. I'd love to hear the story about something like, say, a dinner that really changed the trajectory of your career. Thank you.
Actually, I don't know whether they changed the trajectory of my career, but I think maybe, you know, there were many ones. I think when I found my first co-founders, we were having a drink and dinner, though I don't drink, but we were having drink and dinner at the Bombay gym. And that's the time when I told them that, you know, we need to move into a co-founder relationship. You know, much later, I think when I was looking at strategic partnerships with some media companies, I think a lot got struck across on a meal basis. But I think the context of, since you mentioned the word dinner and life changing, I think at various stages, there are all stepping stones for where you want to necessarily get. So again, I'm not very big to point out any one single situation because it's always going to be an ongoing process. And I think the benchmarks of what you said today need to be fivefold more at a different level. So I think that's what the best I can say here.
Yeah, I'm going to follow up on that question with a quick follow-up from my side. Yeah. How important or unimportant or time-wasting do you think dinner meetings are? Just meetings which are over meals rather than meetings which are in like...
No, regular. I think it kind of allows you to understand the other person. Mm-hmm. I think it is important.
Okay.
Besides, I'm a foodie. So I think it's important to have food and have a conversation. It gets more productive. But yes, it does loosen up the situation.
It does. Right.
It becomes less transactional. Mm-hmm. And always there's a good formula for success if you can stay less transactional.
Right. Okay, great. Yeah, I agree with that completely. I find dinner meetings great. To be the
Lovely.
Most best. So here's the last question we have. This one's from Cyrus Brocha.
Ronnie, as a super successful businessman, I have only one question to ask you because you're also a South Mumbaiker with lots of money. Where do you park your 7 cars? There's just no space.
Yeah, the secret for that is only have 2. One for my wife and one for me. Then you don't need to worry about parking space.
All right. Thank you, Ronnie. This has been a great kind of the podcast to do with you. We've really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Thank you.